This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
It's sad when a mother has to speak the words that condemn her own son, but I couldn't allow them to believe that I would commit murder. They'll put him away now, as I should have, years ago. He was always bad, and in the end he intended to tell them I killed those girls and that man, as if I could do anything except just sit and stare, like one of his stuffed birds. Oh, they know I can't even move a finger, and I won't. I'll just sit here and be quiet, just in case they do suspect me. They're probably watching me. Well, let them. Let them see what kind of a person I am. I'm not even going to swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see, and they'll know, and they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Minutes after the hour of one in this, the month of October, in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along, making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. Thank you for joining us today. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. If you would like to join us today with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, comments, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, whatever it is that you might have. It's 503-505-6964. You can also Skype us directly if you would like. That is Rick Emerson Show. That is the username there. That is Rick Emerson Show at Skype. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor can be reached as well. It is dawn@rickemerson.com. dawn@rickemerson.com. And again, it's 503-505-6964. Snuff watch coming up today. Penis watch coming up today. Taser watch. Clown watch. And Dawn Taylor is working on the following headlines for you on this Tuesday. Sorry.
I'm doing good.
Am I interrupting your morning repast?
No. A search continues for a missing Washington plane. I got nothing else. That's it. No.
How's your day going so far?
It's not good.
Okay.
I seem to have forgotten the part where, like, I do this during this show. Just briefly. It's okay.
Would you like me to come back to you later, or shall we just move on and edit this part out in post? We can leave it in as a demonstration, Dawn, that we too are human. If you cut us, we bleed.
That.
Okay. It's 503-505-6964. So that is all on the way. We'll also do today's top five. The top five songs about dead teenagers, which is something that you have put together. And I don't know what's on it. I don't know. I mean, I got some theories. I mean, I got hankering is the wrong word. I got some speculations. I have some hypotheses about what might be on there.
And top five, again, these are my personal favorite teenager songs.
Is one of these by a prominent girl group from the 60s?
Indeed it is.
Okay, see, so I know what we're talking about now. I didn't know, it was unclear, when you say dead teenagers, that maybe, depending on what sort of, what kind of genre you're dealing in, that could just be all over the map. I mean, we could go any number of directions with that. All right, so top five songs about dead teenagers, that's coming up. We will also have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Pop Culture Authority today. Does the shower sequence in Psycho contain any actual violence? That's coming up. It's coming up this hour. Your never sounds more festive than when it's set around a mouthful of bagel. Is that bagel?
It is.
Bagel. I can always tell. You have several distinct sounds that you make Look, can I just ask you this? Look, I don't mean to just...
No.
Maybe we should talk about this off the air.
Ask me anything.
But do you have, like, some sort of... Is there something where you can't eat until the show actually begins? I mean, you're up at, like, 7 a.m. It's 1:30 in the afternoon. I'm not faulting you for eating, you understand? You gotta eat. Brother gotta eat.
There's a timing thing where it's like, I eat some kind of breakfast early in the morning. I come in, we do like the Legion of News at noon.
Right.
Then it's like 1 o'clock, and then it's like, if I don't eat now, we're gonna be on the air till like 3:30. And I ate my breakfast at, like, you know, 9.
Uh-huh.
There has to be some sort of lunch in here somewhere. It just has to be.
Okay.
Usually, my timing, I've tried to get my timing so that I get the lunch eaten while we're, like, doing the turnover. But,
so this is, like, in the 1 to 1:15 sweep of the clock
but,
there.
But some days, I end up getting focused on doing work tasks and... don't actually get the food consumed.
Okay, I just didn't know if it was like how, you know, some people got to read when they're eating, and I don't know if you had to eat while you were talking. If it was just...
I just found that if I don't, like, actually eat lunch in this 1 o'clock period, then by towards the end of the show, I've gone, like, way too long since breakfast, and my blood sugar starts to, like, sort of plummet, and I get really cranky, like, really, really cranky. And then I'm starving by the time the show's over.
What does cranky Dawn look like, do you suppose? I mean,
you've seen me cranky. It's not pretty.
Maybe we're grading on different curves. Maybe I've never really seen cranky Dawn then.
Oh, I'm sure you have.
Which sort
of
boggles the mind. All right, we've got somebody calling here, so we'll go right to the phones here in just a moment. But the top five coming up today, top five songs about dead teenagers. We will also get to the Pop Culture Authority. Snuff Watch, Penis Watch, Taser Watch, Clown Watch. We'll talk Geek-O-Lantern stuff here in just a moment as well. Right out of the gate, this is Ryan. Hello, Ryan. You're on the Rick Emerson radio program. You are setting the tone for the entire day by being the first caller. The success or failure of this call will determine the success or failure of this show in general and perhaps the rest of our lives. No pressure. Speak.
Rick, I wanted to know, and you probably know this fact, why is Ric Flair known as the Nature Boy?
Oh, wow. Oh, you're blowing my mind. I actually don't know the answer to that. Oh. Listen to the sound of abject disappointment. Like he's just, like I've stomped on the dollhouse of your dreams. I don't know. Don Taylor? I feel like a huge, by the way, just a big fat effing failure because I realize as soon as you ask that, and there's that whole thing with the five stages of grief, which is like with denial and anger and bargaining and acceptance or whatever. I went through like the three stages of Rick's pop culture shame because I thought, ooh, he's asking me a question. I'll be able to tell him. Oh my God, what's this question? I don't know. Oh, the shame and horror. How will he ever forgive me? So now I really don't know.
Is he 500 years old?
Well, that seems implausible unless he's the demon Thoth, but I mean, that's also possible, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, didn't he have, like beautiful, long, flowing hair?
What?
Didn't that have something to do with it?
I don't know.
Did he wrestle barefoot or something?
To call what...
He was always about the woo-woo.
Yes. Aren't we all, sir? Well, to call what Ric Flair has on his head hair at this point is sort of... It's more of like a candy floss you might get at Coney Island that they've just sort of fashioned into a wig. Like, the thing about... Man, can I just tell you, I was at Rudy's Pizza the other day, which is a fine pizza that is not too far from my home. And behind the counter at Rudy's Pizza, I swear to God, this happened on, like, Saturday. They have a framed, autographed photo of Ric Flair. And it's like, to Rudy's, Ric Flair, woo! You know, at the end or whatever. And it was a photograph taken... I mean, it wasn't, like, taken last year, but it wasn't 20 years ago. And he looks bad. I mean, it's a publicity photo, and you got to figure in a PR photo, they are shooting you at your very best, and they're, you know, they've got the great lights and the makeup, and they do airbrushing, and they pick the best photo out of the 500 pictures they've. I mean, I've taken PR photos where they sift through and they try to find the very best shot they possibly can, the best shot of Ric Flair they could find. He looks like a cadaver that has somehow been reanimated like Golem style, or like if you put Kurt Loder in a pair of Speedos. Anyway, so no, the answer is that I don't know that information. Are you listening live, sir?
I am. I'm in London this time.
Okay, so if you are in London at this moment, if you are going to be listening for just a bit, tell you what, we'll dig that up. And later on, because we're doing Pop Culture Authority later this hour, it's about Psycho. It is. Does the shower sequence in Psycho contain any actual violence? I will augment that And I will do a sort of mini pop culture authority, either before or after that, as like an adjunct, in which we will talk about Ric Flair and his nickname. Because I feel like I can't fail you in this regard, or else it's going to irrevocably change our relationship.
Awesome. Best show ever.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right, there you go. Brian and Lucky.
You know, the retarded thing is that I feel honestly disappointed myself. I just, I feel as I've let all of assembled humanity down.
I'm shocked you didn't know that.
I don't, and you know...
It just seems like something you would have wedged in your head.
Here's the weird thing about that, is that I was thinking, because I was, you know, I'm not much of a wrestling fan now, you know, but I spent a long time, and a lot of my years as a professional wrestling fan. One of the great moments of my life, and I mean this sincerely, I was just talking to somebody about this yesterday, actually. I was at the, when we were taping Outlook Portland, I was talking about how we got to get Roddy Piper on at some point, because one of the great thrills of my life was interviewing Roddy Piper. I did a phoner with him, and then he was actually in the studio with us, because his kid is a does mixed martial arts. His kid does sport fighting, which is like UFC. And
I would love to meet him.
Roddy?
Yeah.
He's the coolest guy, man. He's just the greatest guy. And I mean, legitimately grateful for his success, realizes that, you know, that he is where he is. This is one of the things that I've, you know, not to compare myself too much to professional wrestler Roddy Piper, but, you know, I love guys who really respect the fans and who have the relationship with the audience where they realize that the audience is the only one that makes it possible for them to do what they do. To some degree, I have always tried to model the way that we are with the audience on guys like that who are really, you know, who don't just mouth that, you're the best audience ever, which is the same thing that, like, some dick from, you know, The Scorpion says, like, in every city. I've tried to be very upfront of you to never lose sight of the fact that without the audience, it's just, I'm just some douche. But Roddy Piper is a guy who clearly realizes that we're, you know, there but for the grace of the audience. He's some guy working on a dock somewhere, like unloading trucks, you know, or maybe not even that, maybe just nobody. But he was here because his kid Colt Piper was going to be wrestling in Sport Fight. Anyway, so we had them both in the studio. Can I just tell you this? And we're getting far afield, but I'll work my way back. By the way, this sort of tangent is brought to you by The Cleaning Solution. That's 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. If the mat in your home is spattered with the blood of the vanquished, Michael Beatty can take care of that. 971-533-3211. So we had Roddy Piper in the studio, and the greatest moment of that interview, well, there were the three greatest moments of that interview. One is when I referenced Hell Comes to Frogtown, and he was shocked because apparently nobody in all of his many interviews has ever referenced that movie.
Really?
Hell Comes to Frogtown, in which he is the last fertile man on Earth,
yeah.
And he has to impregnate women and save them from gigantic frog beasts. Which is awesome. That's one. Two is when I brought up the fact that early in his career he wrestled a bear, like an actual full-on bear. And you could tell as a story that he's embarrassed by, so to speak. But again, he's like, people want to hear the story, he tells the story. The third is that he was talking about his kid Colt being in Sport Fight. And you got to figure, you know, that's a bit of a mixed blessing. If you're Roddy Piper's kid and you're going to be doing Sport Fight, which is a real, like, a mixed martial art, you got a little bit of, you know, recognition because your dad is, you know, a pro wrestler. But on the other hand, you probably got some baggage there because, you know, it doesn't necessarily help Sport Fight to be viewed as a real sport, which it is, you know, if one of their stars is, like, a pro wrestler's kid or whatever. So it's a little weirdness. But he was talking about how proud he was of his kid. And I swear to God, he just started to snuffle and just to weep like a woman. And it was so charming. It was like, and then all the guys in the studio, we all like are having to fight off, you know, tears, because it's like if you see a guy, like if you see, you know, it's like the Brian song thing. If you see another man, a man cry, then suddenly you just, it's so sweet. And you're just like, we're all just choking back tears. It just like children at, because Roddy Piper is chewing bubblegum and kicking ass and crying in the studio.
So exactly how is Sport Fight actually the name of a specific...
It's a league. It's like, okay. It's like UFC. People say Ultimate Fighting like as a generic term, but Ultimate Fighting is, you know, that's a Brett's brand.
Yeah.
Like the NFL is a brand. I mean, there's professional football, but there's the NFL. There's mixed martial arts fighting, but there's UFC, which is a brand. Extreme Fighting was a brand. Sport Fight is a brand. Sport Fight is notable because it's run by Matt Lindland, who is a guy from here.
And this is all that stuff where these guys do actual martial arts stuff, but they also like have boxing gloves and can kick you in the head.
They can do anything. Basically, I mean, except for like, you know, except for like biting and what they call the fish hooking, which is where they'll hook their fingers inside your cheek, inside your mouth or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, you know, beating a guy in the junk. You know, except for like, you know, and I think you can't eye gouge or whatever. It's like all the stuff that is not allowed anywhere. You can basically just do anything. And it's the reason why mixed martial arts is so great. And I'm not like a huge, you know, I'm not a big sports guy. But I went through a time in my life, especially when I was a boxing fan. And I really do like mixed martial arts because I sort of view that as being the only legitimate. It's the only real sport to me because everything else is like, you know, you're on a team or you got the weather or it's like, is it AstroTurf or is it grass? And it's like, well, you have the, you know, the home court advantage or don't you? And it's like you have equipment failures and it's like, well, I'm playing with a different kind of ball. And, you know, there's that thing in hockey where now they have the puck that has the LED on it, so it's easier to follow the action. But with boxing and with, like, mixed martial arts, it's like there's none of that. There is this sort of beautiful Zen-like simplicity to it where it's like two guys go in, and they hit each other until one of them can't get up anymore, and, like, the other guy wins. End. I mean, it's like one moving part. It is, like, the simplest, most basic thing, and so there's kind of a beauty to it.
And basically, whoever is the best at it wins.
Yeah, and it's the other great thing about, and the reason they call it mixed martial arts, it's sort of like what kids would do, you know, like little boys do, where it's like they find a red ant and a grasshopper, and they have them fight it out, you know? Or like a, you know, like a bee and, like, you know, like a praying mantis, and they put them in a jar. This is where you'll get, like, a guy who has, you know, who's, like, practices, like, jiu-jitsu or something, and then a guy who's, like, a boxer. Or a guy who does, like, actual real, like, wrestling, like actual Roman-style wrestling, and a guy who is, like, you know, who knows Taekwondo or something. And so it's different disciplines facing off against each other. It is pretty great, actually. And then when you're in the studio with guys like that, the amazing thing about sitting across from a guy like Randy Couture or somebody is you realize he could just kill you with one punch. I mean, that, like, he could punch you and your head would just come off.
Yeah.
I mean, it would detach from your body. So Roddy Piper was just great. I mean, he was the coolest guy, and I watched him growing up when I was he would be on what was then the WWF. You know, the great thing about Roddy Piper, and my mom pointed that out to me years later. One of the reasons probably that I was so into him is, you know, what his persona was. I mean, he's got the whole Scottish thing and everything going on, but he was a talk show host. He actually did a faux TV talk show called Piper's Pit on the WWF every week, which I would watch. I mean, he's far and away my favorite wrestler of all time. So.
Well, yeah, one of the reasons I always really liked him is that he was one of those guys. He actually had a really good sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
And he seemed really smart. And you know, and yeah, he was very personable, and he could actually act.
Oh yeah, and he had some style to him. He has and he does the wink and the nod when he's wrestling without ever like, but without shattering the illusion too much. He could tell he's having fun with it.
Yeah.
Seriously, I won't now because it would just be stupid. It would just be the thing where like you would find it interesting for 5 seconds and then I would look up and you would have been gone. You and your bagel would have left. But I can recount. I will not, but I can if pushed to do so. I can recount specific matches that Roddy Piper took part in when he was a pro wrestler, like nearly blow for blow, beat for beat, where it's like the dramatic arc of the interaction with other wrestlers. I won't go on about it. I'll just say he did this one where it was Piper and Hulk Hogan and this guy Brother Love, who was his persona. He was a televangelist. And it's just one of the best things I have ever seen, like, in my life. And then he did this other match that was like a retirement match with him and Hogan that was just, and it's like his kid was there, and I think it was actually Colt, and it's a whole thing. So later on, we'll find out the answer to why Ric Flair is called Nature Boy. I think the reason, though, to go back to this thing that that Ryan had called about, the reason I never really thought about why he was called Nature Boy is I think to me that's just because I saw him starting with his little kid. I think I just never registered that it's a nickname. To me, that's just like his name. I think I heard him as that, you know, and it never occurred to me that that's a thing he got tagged with, so I don't really know the answer to that. I'll have to figure it out. All right. So that's coming up. Also, Pop Culture Authority, does the shower sequence in Psycho contain actual violence? And so forth. This is normally where we talk about what we did last night, but you kind of did nothing, and I just sat around because I, speaking of wrestling and physical whatever, I had one of those old guy moments where it's, I think I've mentioned where I went to the doctor, I don't know, a couple years ago, and he's scribbling on a pad or whatever, and he was, you know, it was like my yearly physical or something. And at one point I said, well, and I got this pain all up and down my left side or some crap. And he said, well, you're not getting any younger. And then he just went back to writing. And so that was like indication number one that I'm becoming aged. Indication number two was when he said, now we're not talking bifocals yet. Except they don't call them bifocals now because none of us can handle the fact that we're aging. So, like, just like we've become just like baby boomers who can't handle the fact that they're no longer the youngest generation on the planet. They don't call things bifocals anymore, just like they don't call music oldies anymore.
Are these progressive
Progressive lenses,
yes.
Don. And they don't have the line on them. It's just like the one lens. You know, yeah. They don't have the little dividing thing. So that was the second thing. The third thing So I'm doing my laundry last night because I got, you know, that was my one big job last night. I was prepping for this Outlook Portland thing today, and then I was doing my laundry, and I was bringing up, laundry from, you know, downstairs and taking the new laundry downstairs. And so at one point, I just go down to the basement to see if the laundry is done, and I open it up and not done yet. So I close the dryer and I'm walking up the stairs. Keep in mind, I'm not holding anything in my hands. I'm not carrying anything. It's not like I have a bin of laundry with me. It's just me. I'm just carrying my own weight, which is not, like, that substantial. So I'm just walking up the stairs, and I got about halfway up the basement stairs, and all of a sudden, there was just, like, this shooting pain in my, like, in the small of my back, and I just went, gah! And I just sort of collapsed, like, onto my knees on the stairs. And I swear to God, there was just a moment where I had that whole thing in my head where I was, like, I saw myself tumbling down the stairs. And, of course, Laura's not here, so I just picture the dogs eating me after a day or two. Starting with my toes, me going, Max, bad dog, mustn't. Oh, crap. And Max just, you know, just eating one of my legs or something.
Max is thinking, finally.
Seriously. And me going, no treat for you. Bad, bad. You know, sit, heel. No, not that heel. You know, and just, it's just all being.
Milo's up at the top of the stairs, scared.
Yeah.
And just thinking, uh-oh.
I'm next. So I sat there for a second. And then I thought, okay, well, I don't know what that was. And I was, like, seeing, like, did I hit it? Did I bump into something? Like, is there, like, a nail sticking out of the wall that stabbed me? And it was just for no reason. My back just went, and just, I have no idea what it was. So I kind of, I'm not going to say I crawled as such, but I sort of, like, did sort of a, I was almost at the top. And so I did sort of a hands and knees kind of a thing. And then I kind of sat there at the top of the stairs, and I went, all right, well, I don't know what that's all about, but let's just stand up now and we'll pretend like I didn't have it, which is what guys always do, you know. Let's just pretend that injury didn't, like with the thing with my finger, you know.
And just shake it off.
Yeah, seriously, it'll be fine tomorrow. Just take some aspirin. So I was like, okay, let's just stand up and we're going to pretend nobody saw that. So we're going to pretend that we didn't just have like a weird back spasm like a freaking old person. And then I go to stand and it was just that thing where like it just didn't work. Like, I just tried to stand, and it just didn't function. I was thinking, all right, now come on, let's go, you know. And I was just trying to get all the legs and the back and everything to work properly. And it was just like the message just was, it wasn't like I was paralyzed as such. It was just like I sort of couldn't make it actually happen. And so then I'm making this sound way worse than it is, because obviously I'm walking around today, and everything's yeah. fine. But I thought, okay, well, you know, maybe I just pulled something. Here's a doorknob. I'll just kind of push myself up at the doorknob, and it'll be fine. And I grab a hold of the doorknob, and I use it to sort of stand up. And I got, like, maybe 6 inches off the ground, and it was like someone had just set my back on fire. And I actually had to sit there on the ground, just sort of, and I couldn't even really lay down. I actually just sort of sat there, sort of as though I were kneeling to hear the Maharishi speak, for about 15 minutes. And then you're thinking all of these things, like, okay, well, what if I can never stand up again? Like, what if it's tomorrow morning, and I got to go to the show, and it's like I'm kneeling? Like, what, am I going to call a cab? Is he going to put me in a board and put me in the back of the car that way? I mean, how am I, you know, this is, of course, my big thing. Is like, not should I go to the hospital because I can't stand, but how will I do the show? You know, and, which, by the way, that's how much Rick Emerson wants to give you value for your 32 cents. That was my thought. It wasn't like, will I be able to feed myself by this time tomorrow? It was, how do I get here and entertain the people? So after a while, I just crawled over to like my to the chair in my office, which is where I sit and I do all my work or whatever. And I kind of just hauled myself up onto the chair and sort of turned around and just laid there in a reclined position so that it wasn't doing the thing that pulled my back muscle. And I just sat there for about half an hour, just sort of idly staring at the ceiling, and then like. This is when you realize just what an idiot I am. Using one of my feet to reach up and press the space bar on my laptop so I could resume watching Boardwalk Empire. Meanwhile, it's like, who knows? It's like I could have been all reeved up in the chair, you know, where it's like I'm just going to be breathing through a tube to move my wheelchair around.
So it's not
around.
Occurring you to call someone
no.
for help.
Who am I going to call?
Or anything. You're just really the concern is to get into your chair so that you could, like, turn the laptop back on and keep watching TV.
Yes, and I was able to do it with my leg, and so that's when I knew I wasn't paralyzed. I'm like, aha, the leg works well enough to press a button on the laptop. That's all I need. And, you know, and so then the episode ended, like, 20 minutes later, and then I did this sort of, that tentative, you know, like, all right, I guess we'll try this again. Hold on. And it's like, and when you've injured yourself, I think, it's like trying it again later is actually worse. Because you're like, okay, time has passed. If it works, great. If it still is broken, then we might really be effed. And then fortunately, I was able to stand. But even this morning, I mean, I can walk around, and it's not like I'm hunched over or something. But it is there is like this weird dull ache in the small of my back. No idea what caused it. Again, I wasn't carrying anything. I was just walking up the same stairs that I've walked up like 1,000 times. And then it was gone. Like an hour later, the whole thing had more or less passed. It was the weirdest thing. So I'm really just falling apart. You know, I got that whole thing where my hand was like falling off last week.
And you're just giving yourself random like paper cuts sitting over there.
You weren't even here on Friday when I did that thing with the scissors. I don't want to tell you about it. It's the worst injury. I could tell you, but it would be off-putting. I had this whole thing written down where I was going to tell you about this scissor injury, but you don't want to hear about it.
You just damage yourself for doing nothing.
This is what happens when my wife isn't around. I just start to half-life away into, like, nothing.
I realized something just now. We were talking. You had asked me in between shows if I was okay. You said I seemed a little off. And then, of course, we had my whole incident at the beginning of the show going, I forgot about the
I heard nothing.
I realized that what it is that I've developed this sort of this habit, this ritual, where I come into work and I have the Visa, and I drink something. Usually, I will drink something.
You mean a Visa like this?
Yes, and I usually drink something, you know, during the first show, and I try to time it so that I'm like either halfway through the first Visa or starting the first Visa or whatever when we get to this show so that I can be like completely, totally caffeinated throughout.
Right.
Some mornings I need extra caffeine, so I'll drink like a quad espresso so that I'm just up to get the whole thing. I have this sort of lengthy day where after the show today I'm going to go meet with a friend and we're going to start a writing project, and I don't know how long that's going to go. And I didn't want to like crash and be exhausted after this show, so I put off the Visa. And the Vizo is still sitting in the fridge, and I have never drank the Vizo.
No. Why would you do that?
So now I'm sitting here drinking like a Coke Zero, and it's not really the same thing. And I think the thing is, that when I said, I don't think I'm off. Nothing's really wrong. I feel fine. I'm cheerful. That was it, is that my blood caffeine level is really about half of what it normally is at this time of the day.
No, why would you screw with that? Why?
I was trying to pace myself.
There's no pacing yourself. That's, I mean...
Because usually I, like, get up in the morning, have a cup of coffee, then I, like, caffeinate, get through the shows, caffeinate. And by the time I get home, around 4:30 or 5 o'clock or 5:30 or something, when I hit the house, when I get home, then I suddenly just go, and tired now. And I didn't want to do that this afternoon because I've got things to do.
Oh, so. I see. So there's something else. There's another project more important than this one.
Well, I thought I would be outsmarted myself. I put the Vizo in the fridge and decided I will start drinking the Vizo maybe halfway through the show. And then, and apparently that's just not working for
me. Okay. All right. What have we learned today, Don?
Well, don't mess with the Vizo ritual.
And that nothing else is important as this show. This
no.
is the most important thing in your life.
This is the most important
Everything
thing in
else
my life.
Pales when compared to doing this program.
And if I need to, like, use massive amounts of stimulants to put on a good show for the people,
that's right.
Then I need
you
to do that.
You owe it to the people, Dawn. The people are paying for your drugs.
So I apologize to the people and to you, Mr. Emerson.
Well, that's all right. It's okay. Just don't let it happen again. Not that I could do anything about it. At this point, I can't even stand. What am I going to do? I'll come over there and... Oh, I guess not. Come over here.
Jesus.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Snuff Watch, Penis Watch, Taser Watch, Clown Watch, Ahoy. All of that on the way, plus Pop Culture Authority, Top 5, all of that. Real quickly, before we do anything else, two bits of business. One, the Geek-O-Lantern entries are now... we have received the last of the Geek-O-Lantern entries. So all of those submissions are done. Last night, 11:59 is when the deadline happened. Cheryl just sent me an email this morning. She just said, I have no idea how you're going to pick a winner. And me either. Have you looked at them today?
I have. It's like for a while, it seemed like it was going to be easy. We only had like 6 entries, and we had five prizes, and we're like, this will be easy. Then at the last minute, we get a whole bunch of just amazing entries.
I mean, it's just astounding. And I guess I should have anticipated, because we were thinking, well, like they were coming in kind of slow, and we're thinking, well, are people really going to be into this? Are they really going to want to enter even for this cool Think Geek stuff? What I should have realized actually, when it was taking a while for the first entries to come in, is that, well, of course, people are waiting until it's closer to Halloween because they want to be able to use these.
Yeah.
That's what occurred to me last night. I was like, well, of course, if you're carving something that's this freaking awesome, you want to be able to actually put it on your porch, and so you're not going to do it like October 5th or something. So if you go to rickemerson.com/pictures, You can see, and some of these I hadn't even seen when I went to bed last night. This guy, by the way.
They're so good.
This guy who did the Iron Giant one.
Yes.
That's almost cheating, by the way. That's almost dirty pool, because, you know, I just look at it and I just start crying.
Just playing to us.
Just look at it and just Superman, you know, and then I just weep openly. Several people did the Don't Panic guy from Hitchhiker. Not several, but more than one. But the thing is, they were all done differently. Like, one guy actually colored the pumpkin green. There's this Star Trek one, which I had not seen last night.
I don't think I'd seen that one.
Check out this. Check out the Star Trek one, and it's pretty astounding, actually. If you see this, this is the one that is. It's by Tacy. I don't know how you pronounce the name. So that's recent. There's a another one that I believe, and I can't tell if this other new one is also the Joker or not. It's called Pumpkin Bomb. And it's by a listener named Michelle.
I saw that one. That one.
Now, is that the Joker? I can't quite figure out what's going on there. I mean, it's great. I just don't know if it's a Joker reference or not. The character kind of looks like the Joker, but I can't really suss it out.
I don't know. I think he's a devil. I thought he was just a devil.
Okay, so it's just general sort of, you know, general chaos. So you get a chance. Go to rickemerson.com/pictures. But Cheryl said this morning, she's like, I have no idea how you'll even pick a winner. Because we got the $100 gift certificate to Think Geek. And we got the prizes from Think Geek as well. I mean, they're all really astounding. So congratulations and thank you to everybody who submitted. Right out of the gate, when the first one was the guy doing me as Kim Jong-il, as Stalin, I was like, well, that's number one. That can't possibly be beaten. I just don't know. I have no idea how we'll even...
No, this is going to be hard.
Really is the best audience ever. So today, we're all winners. Later, only 5 of you will be winners, and the rest will be ashamed. But today, all of you, winners. So that's a final thing. Last night, some of you listened live. We taped an interview with Jason Crump and Aaron Duran, the creators of AZ. We talked about the genesis of and the life of AZ, the original zombie-based radio drama, which takes place here in Portland, Oregon. That's going to be airing probably Sunday. We're going to wait till that to put that up because I do some post-production on it to put in some sound effects and things. But so that's going to be up Sunday. It's about a half an hour, 45 minutes of Jason and Aaron talking about AZ. Every day this week, because it is Halloween week, we're going to be putting up another episode of AZ immediately following this program. So today, episode 2 of AZ, which is the original zombie-based Portland radio drama, which aired originally a couple years ago, starring Aaron Duran, our good friends Bobby Roberts, Bobby Winchell, Court Weber is in that cast of thousands. Big Jim Willig is in one of those. So that is airing today, immediately following this program, and then looping sort of forever on the live stream until we do the show tomorrow. And then Sunday, Halloween, we'll be doing an all-day marathon of those, along with this Jason and Aaron interview, which is... and I listened to that episode last night, which I hadn't heard since it originally aired, and it was really fantastic. It was exceptional. If you haven't had a chance to hear those, it's happening today after the show. Those will be in the archive later when this is all said and done, by the way. All right. And this is all true. At the news desk, ladies and gentlefolk, this is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Well, we have a super action-packed double penis watch today, so let's do that.
All right, here's your double penis watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Take a look at my enormous penis, and my troubles start a melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
Oh, by the way, the pumpkin bomb. Our friend Keelan is clever. That is the Hobgoblin from Spider-Man.
Oh, yes, indeed it is.
Nerd.
I'm not nerdy enough to know that, apparently.
All right, there you go. So that's that's who that is. And so that's like, and that's, yeah, it's awesome. I'm looking at it right now. I mean, I was going to say, well, that's one of the best ones we've received, but they're all like the best one we've received. I mean, they're just astounding. I have zero talent. I can't do anything. I can't carve. I can't whittle a snake.
I thought about doing something like that, but then it's like, you know, I couldn't enter it, so I decided, you know, not to. But,
I see. So if you can't win the game, you're not going to play.
Pretty much. That's pretty much
it. Well, fair enough. All right, here's Don Taylor with your double penis watch.
Part one of the penis watch. We have a 3-month-old boy who was taken to an area hospital here in Portland in critical condition after his mother tried to circumcise him at her home on Sunday. Officers were asked to respond on a medical call at the home near East Burnside and 127th Avenue after 2 a.m. Sunday. A woman at the home told investigators she tried to perform a circumcision on her son, and then when she realized the boy was in trouble, called 911.
Now, has there been any clarification as to why she did that?
I don't know. I should really try and find out more about this. I will try and find out more during the show.
I mean, I'm not really sure what explanation she could give that would make it less crazy.
No, there's a level of crazy and or stupid going on there that... is just sort of hard to fathom.
I mean, it's not like it's look, and this is just true. It's not like it's any less stupid if it's being done for what we sometimes refer to as cultural reasons. Yeah. And cultural reasons is really just a way of saying superstition. You know, when somebody says that you know they're doing something like this because it's a cultural tradition or a religious tradition, that is just a way of saying superstition, which is fine. I mean, as long as your superstition isn't as long as your superstition ends where my penis begins. Then that's fine. Have at it. You know, whatever. I don't care. But if your religion and your culture and your superstition involve cutting bits of, I mean, look. What if that's just a thing you just did as a hobby? That's how you know it's crazy. You know.
Well, yeah.
It's well, you know, that's what I'm saying. But people say, no. It's an important part of our heritage. If you would just view, if somebody did that as a hobby, and you say to yourself, well, that guy's crazy. We got to put him in a cell. Why? Well, he was cutting bits off of people's penises. Children. He was whittling their penises away. And you say, oh, that guy's got to be put – we got to put him in a small cage for the rest of his life. Well, that's how you know that it's something that doesn't really have any rational reason.
That's true.
You know? It's sort of like the you know, it's like the it's like I was – well, never mind. I was going to turn into a whole thing.
It does anyway. Seem, though, that, you know, that religions have been pretty good over the years of sort of weeding out – a lot of the more damaging and, a lot of it is really crazy still, but the more damaging rituals to people.
Well,
and yet,
maybe.
Yet this one still survives.
I mean, look, at the risk of sounding like ugly American guy, I think that's probably true more so in certain countries than others. I mean, is it in Mexico every year where they do the thing where the guys let themselves be nailed to crosses?
That sounds like something they would do in Mexico.
I mean, yeah, because it's just, you know, this is a thing we have like every, I mean, it's like, I think it's for Easter, where it's not just like a passion play or like a mock scourging. It's like literally the guys allow themselves to get nailed up onto dogwood crosses. And here's the thing. That's crazy. So, you know, that's the thing that happens less frequently here, I think, than in other parts of the world. And I think that is, I do not think that there's a, that is not a coincidence, by the way, that in countries that I think have more of an institutionalized view of science, where you find the number of people being nailed to things, that drops. Now, we obviously have a long ways to go. I'm just saying, more science, fewer nailings, you know, and whittling away of your genitals.
Well, part two of our penis watch is a story of a 21-year-old British man who's been charged by police in Britain for allegedly tattooing a penis on a man's back instead of the image that he had requested. The 25-year-old victim had been visiting the man, who is a professional tattooist, at his home in Bendumba in Ipswich on Wednesday.
Sounds like you're just making things up or just saying random syllables.
But he was visiting the man when he was talked into getting a tattoo. He wanted a yin and yang symbol with some dragons, but was instead shocked to discover a 16-inch tattoo of a penis with an obscene slogan. He now faces considerable cost to have the image removed. Police said the tattooing followed an argument between the men.
He lost.
During which the professional tattooist allegedly took offense at something the other man said.
I don't think it's alleged anymore. And by the way, if you want to talk about the list of guys with whom you don't pick fights, the guy who's about to be tattooing you, he's the top of the list. It's like right there with the guy who makes your soup.
The victim also alleges he was punched and thrown out of the house following the tattooing.
So he gets a big schlong tattooed on his back and then thrown out on the street.
Yes.
Insult to injury is what that is, Don.
The 21-year-old is due to appear in magistrate's court on November 15th, charged with 2 counts of assault, occasioning bodily harm, and 1 charge related to the Public Safety Act.
Goddamn people are stupid. I mean, really, just first of all, nobody ever again needs to get a yin-yang tattoo. I mean, it's just move on. Fine. And with dragons, no less. Mm-hmm. It's like my... my brother, God love him, you know, and I shouldn't say this definitively because I don't know for certain that this is the case, but I'm almost positive that he has, you know, it's like one of the, like some Chinese character for honor or something, which I guess is great, except it's like, it's not even that there's anything wrong with that because a lot of guys have done it. Like it's not like I have some view that like, because a lot of people have done something, therefore it's not cool for you to do it anymore. It's just that you are immediately putting yourself in a certain category because of the kind of guy who typically does that. You know
yes.
what I mean?
Yes.
It's like, you know, there's nothing wrong with liking a band, even if they're really, really popular. But you do have to realize that if you walk around with your, like, Insane Clown Posse shirt, you will be, like it or not, putting yourself into a certain kind of societal category. And it just seems like you might want to avoid, especially with a tattoo that you can't ever take. It's a T-shirt you can never remove.
I got a tattoo about 10 years ago, and I had always sworn I would never get a tattoo. And it finally, I had been thinking about it for a while, did a story for a newspaper about a new tattoo place in town. And I thought, you know, for the story, why don't I get my tattoo? And so I did that and wrote the story about it. And but yeah, there is, it is an interesting thing because it's permanent. There really was a very strong sense after I got it done where it was like, I am now a person who has a tattoo. Before, I was not a person who had any
tattoos.
You're
in that category.
Yeah, and then it's just like, I am now a person with a tattoo.
What is your tattoo?
It's
how is it that I don't know that?
I thought, yeah. It's the five-fingered hand of Eris.
Oh, you did tell me that. Yeah,
from, the Illuminatus trilogy from,
okay.
Yeah. My, it's from the Discordian religion.
You know, the weird thing is, like, when people get the full, huge works of art or like that. Like, I saw a guy one time, he had the full, like, the Ramones Road to Ruin album cover tattooed on his back. I mean, that's pretty, that's a commitment. It's like, what is that? What is that thing that, is it Michelangelo where it's the, I don't say bifurcated man, but it's not that. It's the guy in the circle and he's extending his arms and his legs and it's like showing the articulation of man. So, like, that's the new thing that my brother is getting. Like, and it's taken up, like, his entire back is going to be this Michelangelo articulation of man thing. Which, I mean, you know, whatever. I don't care. It's just, I don't get that.
Brother or brother-in-law that used to be a Mountie, or is that somebody, am I thinking of someone else?
You are in no way thinking of anybody related to me. I have no relative who used to be, quote, a Mountie. End quote. Who are you thinking of? Who would you be confusing me with that has Mounties in their family?
I don't know. Or don't you have a brother-in-law who's in, like, the Canadian Army?
My brother-in-law, my sister's husband is in the Canadian Air Force, which is not like being a Mountie, I don't think.
It's all kind of the same.
I mean, I guess. Who knows? I mean, it's, you know.
Really? Is it that different?
It's just a lot of drinking. A lot of drinking and waiting for the, you know, waiting for the United States to do things. So that's, I mean, I guess that's it. Yeah. All right. So there you go. There's your double penis watch for
take a look at mounting. My enormous penis.
I'm going to mention that at Christmas.
And my troubles start melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
The best thing about him is that he is just one of those flappy-headed, beady-eyed guys from South Park. And he says, like, you know, he ends everything with A and says buddy a lot. And it's like, you don't want to laugh, but then you just do because he's Canadian. What do you care? You know? It's like, what's he going to do? So, all right. Anyway. Well, let's do one more here, and then we'll do today's pop culture authority. Today's pop culture authority is, does the shower sequence in Psycho contain any actual violence? We'll get to that. Still to come later on today, various other watches plus today's top five. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Washington State Attorney General Rob McKenna calls on the FDA to ban the sale of energy drinks containing alcohol. He says drinks like Four Loko are promoting binge drinking that can kill a person. This following the four students at the University of Washington who everyone thought were drugged. And it turned out that no, they were just
really drunk.
Just really drunk on Four Loko. If the FDA won't ban them, McKenna says he'll take the issue up with the state legislature where a bill on the issue failed earlier this year.
And this is who?
Washington State Attorney General Rob McKenna.
So I don't know how this
works. Using this opportunity to say he's going to do something.
Are they, they're not like from one, they don't have a party affiliation, do they? It's not like Attorney General, Democrat,
or whatever. It doesn't say.
Okay.
So I'm sure he does have a party affiliation, but it doesn't.
I'm just always curious, you know, because everybody, you know, everybody's for liberty, like in theory, but not in actuality, apparently. All right. What cut is this here?
Loco 4.
All right,
We've had a rash of alcohol poisoning incidents around the country involving groups of young people. So I think the legislature will be much more receptive to hearing these arguments.
Whatever. It's not like there's a shortage of young people. I mean, whatever. We're making more all the time. Who cares?
And have we really – has there really been a rash
probably.
Of alcohol poisonings? Like more college students and teenagers – suffering from alcohol poisoning than before?
Probably, but so what? I mean, only I would say yes, not because like society's going to hell or something, but just because you're able to buy alcohol in smaller but more concentrated amounts than you used to be able to. And if you assume that there's, in other words, the number of people every year, the number of stupid people in the world stays the same. It's about 90%. But 90% of people are just deeply dumb. But if you just change, so if that is a constant, if 90% of people, so therefore 90% of, in this case, like college students, let's say, are dumb, if you're just changing, though, the access they've got to tools and you're changing the substances which they have available to them, dumb people are going to do what dumb people do. So a guy who hits himself in the head with a bat, if you give him a bigger, stronger bat, he's going to hit himself in the head with that too because he's dumb. So people who would get alcohol poisoning before are doing it now. They're just doing it faster and more efficiently and probably in greater numbers because, again, it's stronger alcohol. But again, so what? I mean, have at it.
Well, Robbie Kenna says these stimulants counteract natural signals the body gives to make a person stop drinking.
Whatever.
They
feel awake,
so they keep drinking. They'll feel drunk, but it comes on them a lot faster than they appreciate.
Well, I think they appreciate it just fine.
Yeah, I think they want that.
Whether they accurately can assess it, I think, is a different matter altogether. I realize I sounded like a Valley Girl just now, by the way, when I said whatever. But the thing about this is you would imagine he could make the argument, I should become a lobbyist. You could make the argument that this actually reduces binge drinking because you don't need to drink as many to get drunk. One can, you're good, because that's a six-pack, right?
Yeah.
So there you go. You don't need to binge. One can, and you're set for, like, the next few hours.
Well, when I heard that this morning, it's like one can is the equivalent of a six-pack of beer and five cups of coffee. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds like quite
a
bargain.
That's the selling point, actually. How much is Four Loko? How much is a can of that?
I have no idea.
Because I wonder how much it would cost you to buy a six-pack and 5 cups of coffee as contrasted with buying a can of Four Loko.
I'm assuming considerably more.
All right. But later we should call Sarah. She'll know. She understands these things. Well, F that guy. Seriously, F him long and hard with a pronged dildo of some kind.
Ew.
Of the mind. A dildo of the mind.
Oh, okay.
Don.
That's better?
No, not really. I guess not for him. Well, in any event. Squires Electric, unfortunately, follows this mentioned pronged dildos. But I could edit this later so it doesn't happen that way. SquiresElectric.com is their website. That is SquiresElectric.com. And let me give you their phone number as well, 503-252-1609. So, again, we're now in like the third week. We've been playing all this phone tag with Joel Squires. He's supposed to be in the studio with us. A couple weeks ago, I think they were finishing up an office building. And then last week he was going to see the Ducks play, and so that didn't happen. So sometime maybe this week he's going to be sitting in with us. But SquiresElectric.com is their website, and you can find out more about them by calling as well, 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. Now, when I said 90% of people are deeply dumb, you, of course, fall into the 10% of people who are right-thinking. Your brain is rapier sharp, and you're smart enough to know that, first of all, probably smart enough to know whether or not you can suss out how to do electrical things in your house properly. So if you're able to do it properly, you're probably still smart enough to go, hey, you know, I got better things I can be doing with my time. This is the great advance of modern society, is that you can be doing one thing, Meanwhile, Squires Electric is handling all of the electrical things in your house. You can be dealing, if you're remodeling, if you're putting a new room onto your house, or you're expanding, or you're redoing a basement, or you got that thing, it's like when your kid moves out to go to college, presumably to poison themselves with Four Loko at some point, and it's like the kid is out of the house 0.2 seconds, and you are remodeling the bedroom so they cannot move home. Because once college doesn't work out, like once they, say, been expelled for binge drinking all weekend at a frat house of some kind, you don't want them to be able to come back and just be one of those rebound kids. So the instant they leave the house, you are turning it into a home office, their bedroom. It's just gone forever. And you have to, and of course, turning your child's former bedroom into a home office, that will take some rewiring most of the time because you got to be able to, if you're going to have internet access, you're going to be putting a lot of electrical equipment in there, or even just, even if you're not running like NORAD out of your basement, the homes just have way more, in the way of electronic and computer devices than they used to, even 10, 15 years ago. It's just not, technology has advanced to the point that a house that was right 100 years ago is just a relic. A house that was probably wired 25 years ago is just outdated, but you don't want either of them. And you want to have a house that actually is of tomorrow, which is, of course, today. So if it comes to Ethernet wiring, electrical wiring, or anything like that, whether it's repair, whether it's installation or expansion, you contact Squires Electric at SquiresElectric.com or call them at 503-252-6609. That is 503-252-1609, Squires Electric.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Does the shower sequence in Psycho contain any actual violence?
From the Emerson News Network, this is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Rick Emerson. It was and still is one of the most jarring sequences in film history. The approaching silhouette, the tear back of the shower curtain, the screeching violins, and the death of Marion Crane, as portrayed by Janet Leigh in Alfred Hitchcock's masterwork, Psycho. So many myths and urban legends have sprung up regarding this movie, and this scene in particular, we'd be hard-pressed to recount them all. Some are both true and not. Janet Leigh was not out of town at the time of the filming, as is sometimes claimed. She's in the shower for the vast majority of the scene's running time. There is, however, a body double used. Playboy model Marley Renfro appears in segments where Crane's body is wrapped and removed, and also for the final section of the murder itself. As an aside, a close analysis of the film reveals above-the-waist nudity of Renfro, clearly visible, something that censors missed in 1960, but which audience members swore they had seen. Also claimed by the viewers, but long dismissed as imagination, was the penetration of Marion Crane's body by the Norman Bates-wielded knife. Attendees to the film swore that they saw real violence taking place on the screen. Hitchcock, for his part, never confirmed this, but it was widely assumed that because of the tenor of the times, such a shot would not have been allowed, that the ratings board simply would have told him to re-edit the film as many times as necessary to remove the offending violence. Enter the world of frame-by-frame analysis, something that blossomed with the internet and with the sharing of digital versions of the films. A careful viewing of the shower scene shows the blade of Norman Bates' knife clearly penetrating Crane's midsection, though only for a very short time, not enough to be consciously registered. It's now widely believed that this was a marionette or a body double, a prosthetic used to represent the midsection of Janet Leigh. Though this may not have mattered much to Hitchcock, most people didn't consciously register the imagery. Hitchcock was fond of toying with near-subliminal imagery, as demonstrated by the film's final shot, for which half the prints show a death's head superimposed on Bates' face, and half the prints have no such image. So, why show something that no one would really see? Well, it depends on what you mean by see. Perhaps Hitchcock knew that the shot would work on an equal or perhaps even greater level if it was only sensed and not truly seen. The actual penetration of the prosthetic midsection is only visible for 5 or 6 frames of a total of 8 that form the final shot. For a 3-minute and 50-second sequence, it contains an astounding number of edits, especially for the time, upwards of 95. It's also possible that Hitchcock wanted to subvert the censors, with whom he had a long, contentious relationship. It's almost certain that he was aware of both the knifing and of the bare breasts in the scene, and based on what we know of the man and the director, would have found a great deal of pleasure in inflicting both on an unsuspecting public. As was so often the case with Alfred Hitchcock films, the real villain wasn't in front of the camera, but was lurking quite happily behind it.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority from the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when our guest will include Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. He will be in the studio with us tomorrow. That is Wednesday. Also, immediately following today's program, we'll have a broadcast of AZ Episode 2. Doing one episode of that zombie-based radio drama every day this week up to Halloween, which is Sunday. And we'll do a nonstop marathon all day long, including an interview with Aaron Duran and Jason Crump, who are the creators of that that fine piece of radio cinema. So that's all in the way. 503-505-6964 at the news desk. This is
Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
If you are able, let's do our town watch.
What do you mean if I'm able? What are you trying to say?
Well, you had a handful of papers. So
Okay.
You're concentrating on something important over there.
I thought you were mocking me in my newly invalid-like state.
Yeah, if you can reach it.
Here's your... What are you trying to say if I can reach it? Here's your clown watch. Or, Tuesday. Hey, did I send you that, did I send you that clown email that Cheryl passed along?
Yes.
Did I? Did I forward it to you?
Or am I thinking of something? I might be thinking of something else.
Oh, I think you're thinking
of something
else. I
get so many now.
There's a clown art exhibit that's coming to town.
Really?
Yeah. Cheryl sent it to me. I shouldn't be outing her this way. Maybe she's saying, like, you should take Dawn to this and record her screams. Which I like, by the way. That'll be her first remote. Here's your clown watch for Tuesday.
A man who has entertained children as a clown throughout Eastern Ontario, Canada, and who faces sex charges, is back behind bars. Randy Edward Miller, 40, had been free on bail awaiting his next court date to face charges of sexual assault, sexual interference, and distribution and possession of child pornography after an undercover online investigation led to the seizure of computers and cameras. But Miller was returned to jail because people who had signed court documents agreeing to ensure that he abides by his release conditions withdrew. Police then also laid two more charges, one on account of sexual assault and another charge of sexual interference with a person under the age of 16.
So he's a he's a clown part-time, full-time? Does it say where his clown trade was plied?
Well, in addition to being a volunteer with the Boy Scouts.
Of course.
He worked at private parties, fairs, and festivals using several stage names, including Honker the Clown, Randolph the Balloonologist.
I'm sorry.
And Poppy, Santa's Balloon Elf.
Okay, those are all really, really creepy. You noted something before the show today. You said that all of the clown names always seem to take on a special haunting significance after the arrest. But
Honker. Honker the Clown.
I mean, I would like to see some sort of a Venn diagram showing, like, if we could quantify the number of arrests for, like, these sorts of sex crimes every year and how many of those guys are clowns.
Yeah.
You know? Like, what their sort of interests are. And maybe this is maybe like a shark attack thing where maybe we only are focusing on the few and ignoring the many. I'm not saying most clowns are evil, though clearly they are. But is it the other way? Is it that many, many people who are arrested for these sorts of crimes are, in fact, clowns?
Well, I think, it's like most scoutmasters are not pedophiles.
Right.
But
a lot of pedophiles?
It is a situation where if you are a man who wants to spend a lot of time with little boys, you know, that's...
It's a target-rich environment, Don.
Perhaps a volunteer organization you would like to devote your time towards.
By the way, we're not suggesting that. That's not like an actual endorsement.
No.
We're not saying like...
But still, the vast majority of scoutmasters are
not
on the
pedophiles,
up and up.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think it's the same way with clowns. I'm sure most clowns, while being evil and terrifying, are not, you know, into kiddie porn.
Yeah, they're...
But if you like children and want to spend a lot of time with them, touching them, holding them on your lap, pulling things out of their ears, you know, saying, peekaboo, what's this? Oh, look, I got something secret to show you.
Uh-huh.
You might want to be a clown.
It doesn't feel like a balloon.
I'm Poppy, Santa's balloon elf.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, is that the end of that?
Oh, God, yes.
Hey, you know, we don't have time to get to this today, I'm going to wait for Aaron Mesh to – I guess he's calling tomorrow, but we're going to quiz him regardless. You know, when I hold here in my hands, you know what the sound of that is?
Mm-hmm.
That's the serial killer trivia game. Aaron Duran brought this by yesterday.
And both of us just like – it was Christmas. Our eyes got really big. And we were like, We were both so excited.
It's fantastic. So we have to thank our friends at Things from Another World for bringing this by. And it's the serial killer trivia game, which we mentioned. And Aaron, I think, heard it. And he's like, I got one in the back. And he brought it by and he left it for us yesterday. On the front is just a fantastic, smiling, knife-wielding John Wayne Gacy. And apparently they had I'm guessing that they had submitted this around to different companies trying to get it made, because in the front they are there's a quote. You know, sometimes they'll have like a pull quote in the front of a book or something where it says like, you know, a ripping good yarn, you know, says John Grisham. On the front of this, it actually has a quote from Chronicle Books, who are a book publisher in, by the way, one of the many, many publishing houses that that rejected my book last year. It actually says, it's too dark, morbid, not funny, it's not PC, and it's sicko. Says Chronicle Books. So there
okay.
you go. So what do they know about quality, Don? That's what I have to say. Clearly,
obviously,
they are no judges. All right. So we'll get to that tomorrow. And Aaron doesn't know that we're going to be quizzing him. But I feel like I would open it today, but then we'd never get anything done.
That's true.
We would just sidetrack ourselves immediately. We would immediately be derailed. We have to remember that
we're running late today as it is.
That's what I'm saying. We're here to serve the people, Don. We're here to do right by people, including our fine business partners at Castalia Language Center at PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. That's where you can find out more about them. That is PortlandSpanish.com. And here's the thing. I'm going to tell you right now, you men in the audience, ye possessors of the Y chromosome, here's why you want to learn Spanish. Well, I mean, all of the other stuff. First of all, it keeps your brain sharp. It keeps you, keeps you mentally flexible, and it keeps your wherewithal focused to a razor sharp point, so you don't turn into somebody's doddering uncle at the age of 65 or whatever. Also, because Castalia Language Center is a great place to learn it. You don't have to do memorization where you just sit and you're committing something to memory. You're just doing like a bunch of rote recitation or regurgitation of words and facts and prepositions and things that you don't have any context for. It's not just because they keep their class sizes small, which means you're going to get near individual attention, or that they have a flexible schedule, because you're a busy man, whoever you are. You've got a life to lead. You've got things going on. Here's the thing. You want to learn this because then you just sort of keep it in reserve, like another arrow in the quiver, and then when people are least expecting it, you bring it out. Let's say at a restaurant, a party, a social event, a gathering, maybe you're traveling. You don't tell anybody that you can speak conversational Spanish. You just leave it sitting sort of in the back. It was a thing, you know. You just do, you know, it's like a skill that you know, in a role-playing game that you don't bring out. Like a magic missile of some kind, or it's like a boots of escaping, but it's like a...
You're keeping it in your bag of holding.
That's exactly what you're doing. And then suddenly you bring out the Spanish fluency. It is one of the romance languages, after all. If you do it casually, colloquially, a man with mastery over multiple tongues, then you're going to wow those in your presence. And they're going to say, my God, what a continental fellow he is. So really, I mean, if that doesn't motivate you to do it, then you probably can't be motivated. PortlandSpanish.com is the website. Tell Clara Grebel that you heard about it here on the Rick Emerson radio program as part of the Emerson News Network. PortlandSpanish.com is the website for Castalia Language Center. Contact them today, won't you please?
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
First Lady Michelle Obama and Oprah Winfrey are among the speakers at the annual Women's Conference being held in Long Beach, California this week. California First Lady Maria Shriver says women have made great progress.
Hold on. I think kind of all the planets have come together because businesses now understand the importance of women. They control 80% of consumer decisions.
Okay. She also says women continue to make tremendous strides, apparently in buying stuff.
Both waiting for the other person to say something there, and it just didn't happen.
I think women are speaking up and understanding their power as consumers, as breadwinners, as caretakers in the American system.
So basically, Maria Shriver's whole message here is women buy stuff.
It is true. Women be shopping, Dawn.
Okay.
Women be shopping.
Women be shopping. Writing that down.
One of the things we've learned today. All right.
Women be shopping.
All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our Taser Watch.
Here's your Taser Watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson the radio program.
You got me running, going out of my mind.
I can do it, bro.
You got me thinking that I'm wasting my time.
Don't chase me, bro.
I'll tell you once more before I get off the floor.
Don't chase me, bro.
Here's Don. Whoa. What the hell? Here's Don Taylor with your Taser Watch.
This is a rather disturbing sort of a thing. I printed out this story. It was a brand new story that I had here, and I'm looking at it now, and it actually, the date is not current at all. So I'm just going to read it as if it actually just
Nobody
happened.
Knows. I'm going to take that whole part out in post, by the way.
Syracuse police shot a man with a taser early this morning.
Look, I mean, what do you? I mean, are you? Do you only read David Copperfield, you know, once, and then it's not current anymore?
Well, you know, but you get these alerts, like the Google alerts and the such, and then you're looking on the internet and you're looking up the stories, and you think that it's from like right now, and then when you find out it's not, it's a little disturbing.
You know, I just got to tell you, Paul Harvey made an entire career out of talking about things that happened like 85 years ago, so it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
All right.
Syracuse police shot a man with a taser early this morning after he challenged them to a fight, but the 250-pound suspect pulled the device's electric darts out of his abdomen, laughed, and said, "That's all you got?" Officers said they went to the home about 2:50 a.m. after the resident, Lakia Hall, reported that her fiancé had punched her. Police said three officers entered the house looking for the fiancé, whose name was Benjamin Myers, who also lives at the residence. When they headed downstairs to the basement, Myers hollered up, "I'm coming up. I don't want any problems." But one of the officers tried to grab his arm. Myers ran into the kitchen. They ordered him to put his hands behind his back because he was under arrest, but he refused, saying, "It's going to take more than three of you to take me down," and then swung at one of the officers. Police officer Michael Drury immediately fired his taser at Myers. The device's probes hit Myers in the lower abdomen, but they had no effect on the 5'9" Myers. According to the officer, Myers pulled the probes out, laughed, and said, "That's all you got?" He then pointed at another officer and told him he was going to knock him out first. The girlfriend said that Myers had been drinking lots of gin earlier in the evening and hit her in the face with his cell phone, and then punched her in the face after she teased him about staring at another woman.
Boy, this is really a happy couple. They're going to be walking to the aisle any second. Clearly, you shouldn't be cuffing anybody, man, woman, whatever. You don't, you know, you smack people around, that comes back on you at some point. But really, what does it identify the woman's name?
Takiya.
So, I mean, so he whacks her in the face with the cell phone.
Right.
But then she's still around later on to give him a little jibe about looking at another woman.
Yeah, after I'm assuming he's had even more gin.
Seriously.
To drink.
And I mean, you know, and I guess it's understandable. He's probably not going to look at, you know, at her. She's bleeding and swollen. I mean, really, what is there to look at?
She has a big cell phone imprint on the side of her face.
That's not sexy. It's just not hot, Don. Well, in any event, what do you want to bet? I mean, I would lay like even odds right now that if you listen really, really carefully, you can hear her bailing him out.
Oh, yeah.
You can hear the sound of the pen scratching on the paper as she says, "You don't know him like I know him. You haven't seen him in his better moments, in his good moods."
He promised it wouldn't happen again.
He's a good man. He's a good father.
He just gets a little unhappy when he drinks.
The thing about the taser, so the prongs, I mean, I didn't probably see these online or something, but I mean, do you know what do we know what they look like? I mean, are they... because they penetrate your flesh or whatever, and the deal is they're like grappling hooks, basically.
I think so, yeah, they're like, I don't know.
But that implies that they go into your skin. They can't possibly look like what I picture, because I picture miniature grappling hooks, but that seems like a thing that would take a lot of force, and it would like have to go like inches into your abdomen to work, and that just seems like it's a bad idea.
Yeah, people pull these things back out very easily, and
so, I mean,
I don't know.
I wonder how this actually, you know, how the functionality is, the actual mechanism by which they lodge. And is it, and do they lodge like just underneath your skin, or is it literally where they actually go inside you somehow?
I think they look like little darts, apparently. It's like, it's
So it's a dart with maybe those little backward facing fins or something, so that they don't come back out. Oh, okay. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Like about a half an inch long or something. So I guess it actually goes into you.
And I guess it wouldn't even need the little backward fin things. If it goes in, presumably, if it's a dart, your skin is going to sort of, the tension of your skin closing up around it, because it's an injury, will actually keep it in there in most cases, unless you're this guy who just... Now, was the taser functioning properly?
I don't know. That is one of the problems in some of these stories, is that sometimes like the cartridge doesn't discharge or whatever. So
interesting. You know, and I wonder, why don't they... they ought to make a taser that actually has like a dial on it. And so you hit the guy, you tase the guy the first time, and then you can just, and then it's like a, you know, and then it's like a dimmer just for your chandelier light.
Oh, but then, you know, cops would just have it dialed up to 11, like all the time.
Well, but maybe it's a thing where it has to be fired on low the first time, you know, and then if the guy just continues to give you what for, then you just turn it up a little bit, or maybe just sort of back and forth. Or maybe you just kind of, you kind of like put it behind your back. and you keep your finger off the charge button, but you just sort of like, you know, you just spin it back and forth a little bit and go, where do you think I've got it set? Is it 1 or is it 9? Is it 11? Is it 2? And just like a little bit of like a let's make a deal kind of a thing with him.
By the way, does it suddenly smell like food in here?
It really does.
Am I having a stroke?
I'm imagining, they're both possible, I suppose. Your brain could be multitasking as we speak. Synapses could be dying off by the billions. This sentence could just sound like gibberish by the time I get to the end of it. Also, I think Sarah's in the kitchen microwaving something. Or somebody is. I would imagine it's Greg and Sarah, but somebody's making lunch in the other room.
Okay. Because it just smells like soup or something all of a sudden this entire room.
No, I smell that too. So unless we're having some – unless we've got sympathetic tumor response, which seems unlikely.
Okay.
There's your taser watch.
You got me running, going out of my mind.
No. I didn't do it wrong.
You got me thinking that I'm wasting my time.
Don't taste me, bro.
Fantastic. There you go. There is that. This is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Are you feeling optimistic about the direction of the economy, Rick Emerson?
Yes. Wait. No. No, I'm not. No.
Well, Lynn Franco at the conference board says their consumer confidence report this month shows many Americans are still feeling mostly gloomy.
Gloomy. Is that really the term that they're
yes.
using? This is economy one?
Yes.
Right. We've seen a modest improvement in October readings. However, we're still at historically low levels.
All right. That's just all right.
Franco says that when hiring picks up, so will confidence. Really? People have jobs. They might not be so gloomy.
Let's see. Hold on.
The recession has been officially declared over for quite some time, but it's not feeling that way to consumers. And until we begin to see that robust job growth, we're very likely to continue hovering at these low levels.
Well, that's one of those. Like I was going to the Beaverton this morning and The traffic was just insane. I mean, it took me the longest to get there, I think, that it's ever taken me. And for this one shining moment, I was trying to view it in a glass half full kind of a way. I thought, maybe everybody's employed again. Maybe everyone is on their way to a job at the spaghetti factory or something, or just wherever you would go to work in Beaverton. And then, of course, there was just a broken down car by the side of the road. So that really is that's a microcosm of the entire thing.
An AGU Florida candidate, Alex Sink.
I'm sorry. He's a candidate where, Don?
Florida.
While we was like, stop, you're spraying the babies.
Damn it. I'm sorry. I'm not even going to bother to play the real one. What's the point?
Is that what it sounds like in Florida?
She sounds like she sounds a bit like a squalling toucan, you know?
That's why we was like, stop, you're spraying.
It's just sort of like a macaw. Okay. Wait, is a macaw a bird?
Yes.
Okay. I was thinking it was, you know what I was? I was thinking of Mr. Micawber from David Copperfield. Never mind. Sorry.
An aide to Florida candidate Alex Sink has gotten the axe for sending his boss a text message during a gubernatorial debate, violating an agreement both campaigns signed, banning notes and props on stage. Republican candidate Rick Scott saw Sink's makeup artist show her the two-sentence text message during a commercial break and notified a CNN official. The debate was co-sponsored by CNN and the St. Petersburg Times, who then took away the phone. As soon as the debate resumed, Scott called Sink out on the gaffe. First, Alex, you say you always follow the rules, he said. The rule was no one was supposed to give us messages during the break, and your campaign did with an iPad or an iPod. CNN notes it was actually a droid. Ironically, Sink has focused her campaign around casting Scott as a cheater by calling attention to his association with a company involved in Medicare fraud. The text sent by now former Sink advisor Brian May said, the attorney who won the psych suit said Alex Sink did nothing wrong. Tell not to let him keep talking about her. The post-text debate was just as cutthroat, says Miami Herald. With the race neck and neck, both candidates displayed contempt for their opponent and accused each other of lying throughout the evening.
Ah, it's fantastic. I can't wait for the election. And it's less nerve-wracking here, unfortunately, than it is everywhere else. Because of that thing like in Oregon, because everybody votes by mail. And so as soon as the polls close, which is, like 8 o'clock or something on Tuesday, I mean, it's like, and I don't know if you can't actually vote anywhere in person, right? I mean, there is no ballot booth.
Not in Oregon.
In Oregon.
Vote
it's,
by mail.
But it's exclusively vote by mail. So now everybody drops their stuff off or whatever, and it's like at 8:01, they go, and here's the winner. Bam. And there's no, like, we are denied the entire thing of watching the bars go back and forth in the screen and watching the pie chart change and seeing, like, somebody up by 3% and somebody else down by 4%.
There should be some kind of an arrangement you can make, like a special code that you can punch into your television where once you've actually voted, you don't have to watch the political ads anymore.
Oh, hey, that's a really good idea. You know, here's the thing. I bet that would drive up voter turnout, too.
I bet it would.
Somebody should sell. We should just create this. We should just sell some sort of a box for your television that if you, you know, they, when they give you that I voted sticker or whatever, you scan it, bam, yeah. Commercial video, exactly. The video feed
those
from TV,
all
it's
just
gone.
Blocked. And then you just see things for like the Slap Chop and Viagra.
That's a great idea. All right. Well, you should write that down. Here's the thing, because somebody will market that in the future, and you want to be able to show that you had to demonstrate that orally you had the idea first.
Remember the good old days of political campaigning when George Bush had the patently obvious microphone thing underneath his suit jacket?
I was just thinking about that.
And everyone kept denying that he was, like, being fed answers.
That he was wired up. I was just thinking about that as you read this story about the text, about think about that thing of George Bush. And I don't know if it was there or not. I mean, you know— Maybe it was. I mean, maybe he just had the face of, you know, on Mars on the back. I don't know. But that story frustrates me. The thing about George Bush having the secret microtransmitter or whatever they claimed he had in the back, it frustrates me only because I so desperately want it to be true, not because it, like, confirms everything that I thought about George Bush, because, frankly, I don't need that confirmed by third-party sources at this point, but just because I have this fantasy world in which, like, Carrie just runs over and goes, "Look at this!" and just pulls off the jacket. And says,
I know. That was the most frustrating thing about that, was that he didn't call attention
how
to
how great
it.
Would that have been if, you know, if he'd said, "And Mr. Bush, I challenge you, take your sport coat off."
By the way, you know, Cheney is just standing right over there telling him what to say.
How? See, this is like, there's that, is it DC or whatever that does that series, the What If series? There's some comic, maybe it's Marvel. Mm-hmm. The Marvel does, and by the way, apparently that jack-o'-lantern, that is it's the Green Goblin, not the Hobgoblin. There's been some clarification made here by the various...
By goblin aficionados?
By goblin enthusiasts of all varieties. Somebody says, let's see, where's the... by the way, the pumpkin bomb looks like it's the Green Goblin from Spider-Man, not the Hobgoblin. He throws bombs that look like pumpkins. And then there's like some like long clarification about the difference between the Hobgoblin and the Green Goblin and whatever it is they do. There's two different things, apparently. And then, incidentally, just I imagine this is for you. That'd be my guess. Mm. Somebody has just typed, for reasons that pass understanding, except that they like to keep your day more interesting, in the text box, all caps, mouth-raping clowns with pet spiders. So there you go. I don't even have to check. I know that's a message for you. what was I saying? But Marvel Comics, they have this whole series called What If, and it's like alternate realities. It's like what if Clark Kent had not been found by Ma and Pa Kent? What if he had been found by the Luther family, by Lex Luthor? You know, so there's all of these sort of like various parallel worlds in which, you know, it's like the butterfly effect thing where you step on something and everything changes. But in some parallel world where Kerry just like stripped off his clothing and just said, "I challenge George W. Bush to strip to the waist right now on television." I mean, what would have happened? Or if he'd just run over and just like pulled the thing out and waved it to the crowd.
Or just, I'm sorry, what is that thing under your jacket
there's
back there?
There's something sticking out. Hold on, let me smooth your, hold on, you've got a wrinkle here. Maybe there's a bunching of the fabric.
And the thing is that it wasn't the only time that Bush was seen with that either. There's a real famous photograph where he was doing a press trip on his ranch where he's driving around in his truck in his little checkered shirt and his cowboy hat, and there's this picture of him in the truck, and he's got like some kind of a square box contraption under the back of his shirt, and it's like, so I don't know, you know, I mean, when on the occasions that you actually heard him, you know, speak extemporaneously, it's not surprising that they would want to do that. But I was always just kind of fascinated by the fact that everyone just tacitly went along with it.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's true. If I had the place money, I would default to thinking there's nothing there. Only because, not because George Bush isn't incompetent, and not that he's you know, not surrounded by evil goblins of his own. Clearly, he is and is. It's just that I would assume there'd be better technology than that. I mean, that's like way too – like I could probably buy a transmitter that's smaller than that at Fry's today. So the idea that he would have to have a thing the size of a pack of large cigarettes, I mean, that I just instinctively disbelieved that he would have that shoddy of technology. So maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was just a thing so Cheney could just tase him from backstage.
There's,
you know,
if he said the wrong thing, just
Mr. Bush, do you concede the war is a failure? Well, yes. No, the surge. You know, just plunging on in.
Mr. Goblist.
Oh God! And then we've got this, Rick. Oh my God! All caps. Hobgoblin and Green Goblin both have pumpkin bombs. Will you please? And then it just says STFU. And then he clarifies that STFU is directed at the other listener, not you. God, we're just one.
Well, that's nice.
Just one step away from some. It's like the gayest slap fight in the world. And I think we're already at that point because it's happening, and I'm conveying it via like different. There's like warring text services. There's like texts from this. Like the Jets are over on the Skype box, and the Sharks are over on the Meebo box. And then I'm John Aston interrupting the mambo at the gymnasium to pass along sort of messages from one to the other. Let's take a break from that, shall we?
Yes, let's.
Have a deep cleansing breath here.
I was just getting a little anxious there for a moment.
Jesus, about the hobgoblin thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's cleanse all this away. Hey, speaking of cleansing, let's talk about Michael Beatty, owner and operator of The Cleaning Solution. If that is Sarah and Greg in the... hold on a second. Let's if that's Greg and Sarah in the kitchen, I should take this opportunity to call Sarah, and to get her thoughts on this on the Four Loko.
I could just go get her while you're talking about the
cleaning
solution.
Why you got to do that? Why do you deny
she's
me?
There.
Okay, I'm trying to use technology. I'm trying to impress myself with science and the ability to make a phone call.
All right.
And I mean, what better way to do it than to call somebody who's like 10 feet away? Let's see if I can. By the way, this is also a test of my own memory to see if I can actually conjure up her phone number in my head, even though I haven't had to remember anybody's phone number for like 5 years. What are you doing over there?
I lost the French sheet.
Okay. Well, it doesn't really matter. So Michael Beatty, the cleaning solution, he can be reached at 971-533-3211. And if you've got, some sort of a stain at your home, maybe it's a... maybe you got a thing where it's like the dogs are defiling the home, or they're just making a mess of the joint while you're gone. Or maybe it's like you get that thing where the house just kind of smells like pet, And there's no stain that you can actually see. Like, you can't really spot it. But you walk into the house and you go, yeah, there are dogs in this house. And it's not even anything that vile as such. It's just an overall sort of...
This is Sarah. Leave me a message and I will call you back. Thanks.
Hold on a second. Maybe you get that
odecanine. Press 5.
Hold on a second. And, hey, Sarah, it's Rick and Dawn. We had some questions about Four Loko, and you and Greg leapt to mind as folks who probably know about which... what was I trying to say there? About that which we speak, that of... Well, whatever. So we were just wondering how much you could expect to pay for a can of Four Loko, and if in your estimation, as a connoisseur of many beverages, if it is in fact equivalent to a six-pack of beer and 5 cups of coffee. And anyway. All right. Okay, thanks. Bye. All right, so there you go. So there's that. So you got Four Loko stains or, whatever in your home. You can contact Michael Beatty, The Cleaning Solution, and he will make sure that your home is brought back up to speed, that the carpet is as clean as the day they put it in, or as clean to that as it can possibly be gotten. It's 971-533-3211, a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Radio program that is Michael Beatty at The Cleaning Solution.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, we really do need to do this snuffle.
All right, here's somebody says, I thought the Rick Emerson show was all about disproportionate anger. Why are you suddenly selling out? Sorry, I've gotten soft. It's usually just disproportionate anger, about things that don't involve slightly different variations on the goblin theme. I mean, even for this show, it seems like you're splitting angry green villainous hairs.
Oh,
there.
See, now what you're going to get now, people will be upset by that because they are two very different characters.
Is that true?
Yes, they are.
Oh, see, I don't really
characters.
Know.
Yeah, they are.
I thought the hobgoblin, I thought it was like when you said goblin and hobgoblin, I figured... Oh, God, I can't even believe I'm asking this. So are there not... I thought that one was like maybe a parallel world version of the other or something. Or that... this is Sarah calling about Four Loko, probably.
Okay.
But I thought that the goblin and the hobgoblin... Or that maybe it was like one was from an earlier version of the comic book and then there was like a licensing or rights issue. And so it was like sort of Ziggy with a hat kind of a thing. Or maybe not. Hello, Sarah Dillon?
Hello there. How are you?
Hey, how are you? Are you guys in the kitchen?
We are.
All right. Is that you? Are you making lunch?
Yes, I just did. I just bought this this chicken. I don't even know how to pronounce it. Chicken tikka
masala
from Trader Joe's. It was so amazingly good.
Yeah, that stuff is good.
Chicken tikka masala is fantastic. That's a great dish, is what that is.
And the Trader Joe's one is fine.
I guess really the more impressive thing is that you're only like 10 feet away from us because we share a studio and we could have had you come in and speak into a microphone. But
somebody didn't want to.
Would you like me to pop in the 10 feet really quick?
No, I'm just saying. No,
yes.
It's fine. I'm just saying because she's eating lunch. I don't want to distract her from lunch. It's just in my tiny reptile brain, like the phone is sort of the more impressive thing for some reason. I'm sorry, what?
Oh, I just finished it. I actually inhaled it. It lasted all about 2 minutes.
We just had a question about Four Loko. How much could you expect to pay for a can of that?
It's usually about like $2, $2.50.
And so would you say that it is, in fact, equivalent to like a six-pack of beer and 5 cups of coffee? Because that's what the news keeps saying today.
Absolutely not. No way. It's equivalent probably to about, I would say roughly about 2 beers and like a can of Red Bull.
All right.
And
so,
maybe a little bit of coffee. Like, it's pretty gross. Like, if you can even get down an entire can, that's pretty impressive.
Dawn actually said that it was one of the worst things she had ever tasted in her life. That it was just...
Oh, it's sickening. It's so, so wrong. The only time I've ever been able to drink it is actually, like, cutting it with a different kind of beer, like a light beer, so I can actually take away from some of the flavor.
So it's sort of like a Loco with a beer back kind of a thing.
That's my friends and I will make, we'll, like, split one Four Loco between, like, four of us and then mix the rest of it, like, I'm all class, by the way. I'll put, like, PBR or Mickey's or something.
Wouldn't it be easier just to hit yourself in the head with a hammer or something? Or just, just not breathe for 5 or 6 minutes? Just have somebody gag you? All right. Awesome.
Well, Loco is the last caffeinated malt liquor ever since they took away Sparks. I think people are, grasping onto it because it's the last option.
We should begin hoarding it, maybe, here in the studio. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe it'll be like, because I know that you, when they took Sparks away, you were all pissed off about it. So, I mean, you probably wish you'd saved some. Maybe we should be saving Four Loko.
Oh, no, I can't even do Four Loko. Like, as much as I miss Sparks, I just had to let the caffeinated malt liquor go because it is just way, way, way too gross. You should try a sip sometime and you'll see what I mean. It is disgusting.
Well, where can you – I mean, is that a thing you – can you still buy it now? Like, they haven't taken it off the market or anything, have they?
Oh, yeah. Our little corner mart down the street, they totally sell it. They sell, like – and they have, like, all kinds of flavors, too. There's, like, grape and watermelon and lemonade, all kinds.
Donna's shaking her head no. Well, I feel like if we're going to comment on the story, maybe I should be informed. You know, I should be aware of the story upon which we are giving information. So maybe I'll try
some of
this
tomorrow. Friday we could have a Four Loko tasting.
Oh, God. Like a malt liquor tasting party. All right. We'll take it under advisement. All right. Thank you, Sarah.
Okay. No problem.
Right, it's Sarah Dillon. All right. God damn. No, let's never do that. All right, here's your snuff watch for Tuesday. Rick Emerson radio program. Here is your snuff watch for Tuesday.
Paul, the prophetic World Cup octopus, died peacefully of natural causes at the Oberhausen Sea Life Center in Germany last night.
Awesome.
His keepers announced this morning. He was 2, which is old for an octopus.
And when I say awesome, by the way, here's what I mean by that. I mean that he was able, because was it the, who was it that wanted to kidnap him?
Was that the Spanish? Yeah, because Spain.
Because Spain, because he predicted that their loss or whatever. And there was a whole thing where they wanted to make him into shish kebab or something.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad to see, you know what it is? That's, that's just like the jewel thief dying at the age of 75, living in Barbados, having the high life.
Well, he did shoot to fame during the World Cup for successfully predicting the outcome of 8 games. There was a 1 in 256 chance he would guess them all correctly by choosing between 2 mollusks marked with national flags. Oberhausen Sea Life officials plan to honor Paul by burying him on aquarium grounds and erecting a modest permanent shrine to his psychic abilities. Paul will continue to live on in a range of commercial products, including a mobile phone app and specialty clothesline that will be released next year. And aquarium officials say that a successor may emerge before long. An Oberhausen representative told Der Spiegel, behind the scenes, a young Paul is already acclimatizing himself. He was meant to be trained by Paul I in the coming weeks.
Does it ever occur to you how weird this world is going to look to, like, future archaeologists? When they come down and the mobile format might not still be around, but you know that they're going to have some huge granite statue of him or something out front of the aquarium.
Paul the psychic octopus.
Paul the psychic, the psychic sea beast. I mean, they're going to have such a completely – there was a time when I had this sort of – one of those late night fears that doesn't make any sense during the day. But there was like maybe back in like, I don't know, 2002 or something. I was really afraid that there was going to be some global apocalypse, some sort of catastrophe. We were all going to be killed. And then, you know, alien, researchers are just, you know, the next, the creatures that rose to replace us and then were digging through the ruins of ancient mankind, that they were going to think we all worshipped Scott Thomas and the car guy. Because you would drive down, like, whatever the hell, like McLaughlin or where the street was, and there would just be, like, it was like the Third Reich. There was just, like, thousands of banners with, like, his face on them from every conceivable surface. I mean, it was like some weird, like, Vladimir-esque cult of personality. With, like, the ghostly floating head of Scott Thomas and just looking down from everywhere you went. So, you know, so it's going to be with Paul.
I'm hoping that someday we will discover, like, the ruins of an intelligent, world. You know, maybe during our outer space explorations. And when we start, you know, really digging in and looking at what their culture was on that their planet, it's going to be every bit as stupid as ours. It's going to be just ridiculous, and it's going to be so difficult for us to understand why they did the things they did and why they thought the things they did, because it's all just going to be stupid sitcoms and sugary sodas and alien chicks without their tops on. And we're going to go, wow, they were idiots.
We should start building some structure like that now. Because, you know, they do that thing of like shooting Voyager into space or whatever. And it has like, you know, the sounds of like Earth and greetings in 15 languages and whatever. But we should just create something here specifically for future civilizations to find. Something that makes no sense. Just like a huge thing of like Paul Lind, naked, covered with spatulas or something, or just something that, where there's just like no logic to whatsoever. You know, it's like Jim J. Bullock with a bagel on his penis, and making kind of a jazz hands sort of a thing. And, you know, like, and the wearing a football helmet.
Says, welcome, visitors.
Exactly. And then maybe some smaller statues of just of people supplicating themselves in front of him, just sort of, you know, just kneeling around him and then him putting a hand on one of their heads.
Yeah, but again, though, we have things like that. It's like if an alien,
I guess,
landed,
we have Jesus for that.
And then they see, like, you know, that Babe the Blue Ox thing, you know, out here in Oregon.
The huge donut thing in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean, they'll just kind of go, I don't understand why they have a giant statue of food.
No, I guess that's a fair point. All right, there you go. There's your snuff watch for Tuesday right here in the Rick Emerson radio program. By the way, we should say at this point, so we had Ryan who called into the show right at the top, and when I was lamenting the shoddy state of my back and my vertebra and whatever. And see, here's the thing about when I was walking up the stairs and my back just went out, when I don't even really know that that's what happened. See, I don't know what that phrase means. When people say, and my back went out. Like, your back doesn't go out. Your back is just there.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that means you have a slipped disc or something. And I say that like I even know what that phrase means. And I don't. I have no idea what it means when you have a slipped disc. I mean, you have any notion with that? I mean, don't feel like you have to email me about it now or whatever, but it's like it doesn't seem like your spine can be moving around all that much, because there's that thing they always teach you in science class where it's like the, because in your spine is, you know, your spinal cord, which conveys all the information, and they say that it's actually so delicate that the weight of a single dime is enough to cut off 90% of the information flow through your spinal column. So it's not like your spine can really be bending around, you know, in like a bunch of weird, crazy ways. Because, I mean, suddenly you just, you got no legs in the workable sense, like all, right out of the gate. So I don't even, you know. Or when they say, you'll hear that thing occasionally where they go, his V14 vertebra just disintegrated. Well, I mean, what does that mean?
I don't know. I had a friend drive me to the emergency room once because I was actually at home, and I went in and I was going to use the facilities in my bathroom, and I was sitting down on the toilet, and it's like my back seized up and I couldn't stand back up, and the pain, I'd never experienced anything like that before, and the pain was so excruciating and so overwhelming, and particularly given what I was just about to do, I thought I'd gone into sudden kidney failure. I thought maybe I had kidney stones or something. I had never experienced pain that bad before. And I had to have a friend drive me to the hospital. She loaded me into the back seat of the car, and I was laying on the back seat, like, crying.
The fetal position.
And they took me into the emergency room of the hospital, and the guy was, like, looking at me, and I said, I think my kidneys are failing or something. It's horribly wrong. And he asked me, you know, what I had done that day. And I said, well, I played racquetball earlier, and then went outside in the cold, and he said, and you didn't cool down. I said, no. He said, yeah, you Your back is just
pulled a muscle.
So you're an idiot. Get out of here. Go away. He was so disdainful of me for wasting his time.
Well, because think about it. They just deal with morons all day who just come in there. That's one of the reasons I don't go to the hospital is because no matter what it is, it's like I could be filled with gangrenous pus and I would be afraid to go to the ER for fear that it's going to end up being just gas. Because that's the thing that they'll say, but I think, no, you just have gas. And then you're that guy who went to the hospital and it just turned out to be flatulence.
But they said that a lot more women have heart attacks than realize it because they have different symptoms than men do. And they don't go to the hospital because they think they just have gas.
Is that true?
Yes.
Can I just tell you, we'll roll the top five here in a second so Greg and Sarah can get on here. So I told you about this. I went through this phase some years ago when I had really bad panic attacks. And I won't go into the whole story. We don't have time. But I remember the very, very first time I had an actual full-on panic attack. And it was that thing where I don't mind saying it. And I actually did call 911. I picked up the phone. I was at work, actually. This is years ago. But I picked up the phone and I called 911. And I said, yeah, I think I'm having some heart problem thing, you know. And it was like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm dying. Because then you just picture the tape being played back on the news.
Yeah.
You know? And it turned out the man just had gas. Here's an audio recording. It's me going, oh, my God, I think I'm having a heart attack. And then they cut to the doctor just showing like a diagram of my butt and just saying, and in here is where you'll see the gaseous region. Up here is the heart. They have nothing to do with one another. He is a fool. So I was trying to be
Why does your doctor have a European accent?
I don't know. I have no idea. I have no explanation for that. Because I view him as being sort of, you know, intelligent but slightly sinister, like most Europeans. So I tried to be really, you know, like sort of like, I think I'm having a heart issue. And the guy said, what do you mean you're having a heart issue, sir? And I said, well, sort of pain in my chest and I can't breathe. Also, there's a huge weight on my sternum and it feels like someone's sitting on me, which is all the things of a heart attack.
Yeah.
And so immediately he's like, F this, we're getting you an ambulance. I'm like, well, maybe I could just talk to somebody. He's like, don't move, sir, we'll be right there. And I was like, oh, God. And I'll skip to the end, which is where it was like this horrible comedy of errors because, like, this is a window into my psyche where I thought I might have been having a heart attack. I didn't really know because you've had a panic attack probably,
yeah.
Like a full-on – I mean, it feels like you're dying.
Yeah, it does.
But I wasn't really sure. And my wish to avoid embarrassment was actually stronger than my will to live. And so I actually walked down – I swear to Christ, I walked down two flights of stairs – thinking I might be having a heart attack, walking at the front of the building and sitting on the curb in the street so that I could intercept the ambulance because I didn't want them to come upstairs because then I thought if it's, you know, the gas, then I don't want everybody to know. Fortunately, it, on many levels, turned out it wasn't that. I have no idea what my point – oh, but then it was just – so then anyway, I had panic attacks and whatever. And I swear to God, it was just like 2 days later. I was sitting at home on the couch, and this is before the panic attack had come back, and I didn't know they were an ongoing thing, but I was like living in fear of the next panic attack, which I thought would also secretly be a heart attack. And I'm watching Oprah, and I swear to Christ, Oprah is interviewing somebody who nearly died from a heart attack, but that didn't go to the hospital because he thought it was just a panic attack. And it was like my whole world just went. It was like the last
– oh, God.
The final bolt holding my sanity together just came undone. And I was just dissolved into a heap of just uselessness. I didn't go to work for like 2 days. And it was just a bad thing. So I don't even know why I'm telling that story. Hey, I will say this. You know, I had that whole thing of just climbing up the stairs from the – and then we'll get to the top five here in one moment. Top five songs about dead teenagers. I had that whole thing. I was climbing the basement stairs last night and then just immediately, you know, it just couldn't move. And by the way, several people are asking – they're wondering what it would be – ruminating aloud what it would be like if, you know, Lara had come home in several days, you know. And it's like I was still just crawling around the house. Like, if she'd come home and I was just sort of limping from one room to another. You know, just trying to reach the last bag of Cheetos up in the cupboard. You don't want to do that. You don't want to injure yourself. Avoid the risk of injuring yourself. Don't screw with any of this stuff. It's a serious business. If you are going to be dealing with maybe the recent kind of cavalcade of leaves that come onto your front lawn, or if you're looking at your rain gutters, or that thing that we were talking about, Legion of News, where they've got to clean out your whatever that thing is called, the repository spout drain catcher thing?
Yes, that's exactly what it's called.
The thing by the curb or whatever, they want you to clean that out?
Repository spout drain catcher thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, even if you know how to do that, there's only so many hours in the day. And I mean, let's be honest, you're only on this earth for like 77.2 years. Do you really want to spend your time just cleaning up handfuls of viscous slop that used to be leaves? Probably not. It's like cleaning up a grease trap in a restaurant. I mean, it's singularly unpleasant. So, you know, have somebody else deal with the unpleasant job so you don't have to do that. And that somebody is CJ's High Climbing Service. And it's CJ's High Climbing at CJ'sHighClimbing.com. That's how you get a hold of them. CJ's High Climbing. Or call 503-228-9278. Here's another. We've talked about, you know, the fact that they are, you're not dealing with them. You're not dealing with some company where they just get some guys under the table, you know, that they found like on Craigslist or just like standing around at the mall looking for work or whatever. You know, it's, you know, what's your name? Ted? Ted, what are you doing right now? Nothing. All right, Ted, you want to help, you know, come help us clean leaves of somebody's house? You know, sure, fine. You know, it's an actual company where they are working for CJ's. They are covered by workers' comp. They've got liability insurance. So it's everything is above board and on the up and up, as they say. You know, we've talked about the fact that, you know, they can actually give you an estimate, usually just by using Google Earth and actually looking at your home from space and figuring out what you probably need done. One of the things we haven't mentioned is that not only can they give you the estimate, you know, but they can just send you an invoice. A lot of these companies, it's, and this is how you know that sometimes you are not dealing with a you're not dealing with a firm that is reputable, is they'll come and they'll actually, you know, they'll clean out your gutters or they'll shove all the stuff off your roof onto your lawn, and then they try to hit you for more money to try to clean that up. And plus, you got to be there the whole time because they want you to pay them, like, in cash, small, non-sequential bills, like then. And so you have to be home. You have to take time off from your job to be at home while the guys are cleaning out your rain gutters. And the whole point of having somebody else do it is so you don't have to stick around the house and just stand there and watch it being done or take part in it. CJ's, you don't have to deal with any of that. CJ's High Climbing, they can invoice you, which means you don't have to be home for it. You don't have to be around. They're going to come. They're going to be reputable. They're going to be professional. They're going to be on time. And they're going to make sure that the place doesn't, like, look worse than when they arrived. If they're cleaning out the gutters or cleaning out the roof and it ends up being all over your front lawn or your porch, they're going to take care of that as well. And then they're going to invoice you in a reasonable time frame so you don't have to, you know, take time out of your busy schedule and be around the house. You can contact them at 503-228-9278. That's 503-228-9278. 503-228-9278. You can find out more at rickemerson.com/contacts. That is CJ's High Climbing.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire!
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count, don't you?
Here is your top five for Tuesday. We will get to this momentarily. These are the top five songs about dead teenagers. By the way, confidential to Ryan. Ryan, the guy who called early on and he had a question about Ric Flair and why Ric Flair is the nature boy. So, I should have anticipated that this would be the case, that there are any number of explanations. This is like a whole why do you tap your cigarettes thing. I can already tell. There's going to be like 100 different versions of the story. But you know what? I will not be bested by this. The challenge has been put, the gauntlet has been thrown down. So we'll by tomorrow, we'll have to have this. So this will be tomorrow's pop culture authority. Sort
you
of
get a phone number for Ric Flair and call him and ask him himself.
Here's the thing. I know people. I know people who know people. So we're going to deduce with some sort of specificity by tomorrow, which is Wednesday, why Ric Flair is referred to as the nature boy. So that is coming up tomorrow. Also coming up tomorrow, Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week will join us. He'll be in the studio. Don't forget, coming up immediately following today's program, another exciting installment of AZ, which is the ongoing radio drama, zombie-based, and takes place right here in Portland, Oregon. It originally aired a couple years ago. We're doing one episode per day all the way through Sunday, and we do a special Halloween marathon back-to-back, along with an interview with Aaron Duran and Jason Crump, who are the creators of that. So episode number 2 of AZ begins immediately after today's program. This is your top 5. Don Taylor, the top 5 dead teenager songs of all time. What is honorable mention?
Honorable mention is Terry Jack's Seasons in the Sun.
Really?
It's a horrible song, and yet
I had no idea this was about a dead teenager.
Oh, yeah.
I've never really listened to this. I don't know anything but the hook. I mean, I've heard it a billion times, but I've never really... Yeah. I don't know what it's about.
Together we've climbed hills and trees, learned of love and ABC, skinned our hearts and skinned our knees. Goodbye, my friend, it's hard to die.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, see?
when all the birds are singing in the sky.
Now, that's now have you always known this was about a dead teenager?
Yeah.
How do we know it's a dead teenager?
I think because, I don't know, I'm always assumed just because of the whole, it's just past childhood.
Okay.
And it's a pop song, so it seems like it's aimed directly at teenagers.
It really is a jaunty little tune, isn't it?
Yeah.
Goodbye, Papa, please pray for me.
It's a whole bunch of dead people in this song.
I was the black sheep of the family. You tried to teach me right from wrong.
Wait, hold on a second. No, what's happening here? Is it the narrator who's dead? Is Papa dead?
I think this guy's dying. I don't. I'm not
is he
sure.
Typhoid Mary? Is he slowly offing everybody he knows? Going through the phone book and just one by one. Or is it that he is dead?
I believe he's dying.
Okay, so it's not like early on. It's not that a friend is dying. It's that the narrator of the song.
Yeah.
We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun, but the wine and the song. Like
all right, that's a little unnerving.
We had joy, we had fun,
take it up a step there.
We had seasons in the sun,
but the it is peppy.
Yeah.
All right, then. These are the.
Goodbye, Michelle, my little one.
Yeah, and then I guess. Yeah.
And that is his daughter?
You gave me love and helped me find the sun.
Or maybe it's a girlfriend or something?
Yeah.
Every time that I was down.
Okay, I'm going to choose to believe. We should just start the rumor this is about a serial killer. You know?
He's killing all
or he's some spree killer. He's just, you know, walking through the house and just, you know, just sort of taking to the trash one room at a time. These are the top five songs about dead teenagers. Don Taylor?
Number five, The Four Seasons, No Surfin' Today.
I don't think I know this song. Okay, it kind of sounds creepy right out of the gate.
She was my surfer girl. We surfed in the sun.
Angry Seas, Rick.
Is this one of those sneaker wave log rolling death things?
Actually, Undertow.
Really?
Yes.
That's really the tragedy in the song, right? He's there with his board and his wax, and he's just not able to catch a wave. He's not able to hang 10.
Well, they closed down the beach because there was a death, so everyone's sad because there's no surfing today.
Drag her down below. Drag her down below.
I sense the compositional hand of Murray Wilson at work here. I'll show Brian I'll write a surfing song for the Four Seasons. It'll be awesome. When did this... I mean, this is a 60s song, obviously, but... And I'm trying to figure out if that... If the kid is sort of speaking as himself or if he's embodying the lifeguard who's sort of blocking their way or if it's at a sign he's seeing something. You know, like right beneath, like, you know, footwear required.
Well, I think it was his girlfriend.
Well, there's several different singers here.
Not a very well-written song.
No, it's not. I give you props for even knowing this. All right, these are the top five songs about dead teenagers. Don Taylor?
Number four, Julie Brown, The Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun.
Well done. Oh, okay, I got to start this one from the beginning.
It was homecoming night at my high school.
Awesome.
Everyone was there. It was totally cool. I was real excited. I almost split my
best friend Debbie was homecoming queen.
I know every word of this song in pink chiffon. I had the hugest crush on Julie Brown when I was growing up. You MTV aficionados slash old people will know Julie Brown as the red-haired white chick with big cans.
Because there was Earth Girls Are Easy.
That's right. Because there was Downtown Julie Brown, and then there was this Julie Brown, who they sometimes referred to as West Coast Julie Brown, and she did that show Just Say Julie. That's me. What else was on this album? I mean, this must have come from a full length, from an LP.
Yeah, God, I'm trying to remember. There was one other single on this.
She had a song about...
I Like Them Big and Stupid, I think, was on this
maybe.
One.
But was it all songs, or was it like stand-up or something?
I think it was all songs.
Interesting.
God, my best friend's on a shooting spree. Stop it, Debbie.
You're embarrassing me.
Yeah, actually, this was the B-side for I Like Them Big and Stupid.
Here's the thing, this is a radio edit of the song. They're changing some of the lyrics.
This was actually, I was running short on time and I couldn't find the MP3. So
this is like a YouTube
this
version?
Is actually, yeah, this was actually the version they did as a sketch on her
Just
show,
Say Julie.
On Just Say Julie.
Because they changed, I couldn't hear what they changed it to, but originally that line, how could you do what you just did, she then says, straining at the rhyme, are you having a really bad period? And I think early on, the first line of the song is, in the first stanza, she has the thing about, I almost wet my jeans, and they changed it to split my seams.
Yeah.
It's interesting what MTV considered acceptable then is contrasted with now. I love this song.
Yeah, this was on her album, Trapped in the Body of a White Girl.
That's right. But you know, the funny thing is now, all of the stuff that MTV censored in the song, they would permit, they just wouldn't permit the song itself.
Yeah.
It was real acrobatic, but I was crying so hard.
I couldn't work my Instamatic.
I ran down to Debbie. I had to find out.
All right, these are the top five songs about dead teenagers. Don Taylor?
Number three, The Replacements, The Ledge. And I wavered back and forth about whether to use this one or I Don't Like Mondays. And, but I decided this is a lesser heard dead teenager song.
Here's the thing, is you're going to find that I have almost no Replacements knowledge. One of those bands that I missed out on, and now it's sort of too late for me to internalize a lot of that, but I feel like it's like the Pixies, where I know that I'm supposed to reference the Pixies all the time, and I just really can't, because I don't really know anything about them.
Well, this is about a guy on a ledge.
Great song.
Okay.
I like where we're going with this. Well, you want to talk about a band? I mean, I know enough about The Replacements to know that there should be a movie about those guys.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe there hasn't been a book, at least. You know, you talk about a real star-crossed... so many of those rock cliches, the whole elegantly wasted and, you know, and the young and wild and out of control and the drunken artist thing.
But also incredibly influential without ever, like...
Without being successful.
Yeah, without ever really being successful themselves.
I mean, they're sort of like the Ramones in that fashion, where the Ramones, you didn't ever sell a lot of records. There's that old joke about, only 100 people bought the first Ramones record, but every one of them started a huge band. And so it is with The Replacements, because they get referenced by, people all the time. Wow. These are the top five songs about dead teenagers.
Number two, The Shangri-Las, Leader of the Pack.
Is she really going out with him?
Well, there
Excellent.
She is. Let's ask her.
Betty, is that Jimmy's ring you're wearing?
Mm-hmm. Gee, it must be great riding with him.
Is he picking you up after school today?
Mm-mm.
By the way, where'd you meet him?
I met him at the candy store. He turned around and smiled at me. You get the picture?
Yes, we see.
That's when I fell for the leader of the pack. My folks were always putting him down.
What a great song.
Down, down.
Here's one of life's essential truths. Every woman on earth knows every word to this song. I have never known a woman. It doesn't matter what age, color, creed, nationality, religion. Every woman knows and loves this song. And they all do that down, down thing you just did.
You got it. They're on, I think it was on the Divine Miss M, Bette Midler's first album. She does a cover of this. And she, of course, does all the vocals.
Right.
And it's so good. And I almost went with that version, actually, because it's so awesome.
Not the Twisted Sister version.
No.
No, no, fine. It was this song, by the way, and boy, that Phil Spector production. I mean, just...
So small. Kiss me goodbye. The tears were beginning to show.
This song is the reason that the whole Bat Out of Hell album exists. Because Steinman had this whole thing about wanting to recreate this song over and over and over again, basically. That's so great.
I felt so helpless. What could I do? Remembering all the things we've been through. In school they all stop and stare. I can't hide the tears, but I don't care. I'll never forget him, the leader of the pack.
I could listen to this all day. And it's the great thing about it is it's only like 3.5 minutes long, but there's like 5 distinct movements to it. Because like this part of the song, that little coda they do, that litter to the back, and now he's gone, doesn't bear any resemblance or relation to anything else they do earlier in the song. Jesus.
Any all song right. Where you have like the sound of a car screeching.
Look out! Awesome. Okay. These are the top 5 songs about dead teenagers.
Number 1, Warren Zevon, Excitable Boy.
What an odd song this is. Now, I'm not entirely sure that it fits the theme as much as the others, though.
Well, he went down to dinner in his Sunday best. Excitable boy, they all said.
And he rubbed I mean, pot roast on I guess it's I guess it fits in the sense that he kills other people.
Boy, they all said.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, he's just an excitable boy.
This almost, you know, but here's where my failure comes in. I almost should have put this on the serial killer songs list.
Yeah, that's true. Boy, they all said.
And he bit the usher at Snake in the dark.
Excitable okay, so maybe it doesn't really fit the theme as well as I'd hope, but give it a chance to listen to
any
it.
Any chance to play the song. I'm not going to quibble. Well, the thing about the song, and it just takes such a hairpin turn, and he said the line about taking the girl to the high school prom, and then out of nowhere it just says, like, and he raped her and killed her when he got
See?
Her home.
Dead teenager.
Oh, okay, so there you go. Fair enough.
He took little Susie to the junior prom.
The junior
Excitable
prom.
Boy, they all said.
Everybody now.
And he raped her and killed her, then he took her home. Excitable boy, they all said.
Jesus.
Well, he's just an excitable boy.
I love Warren Zevon, and it's just...
After 10 long years, they let him out of the home. Excitable boy, they
so
all
jaunty.
Said. And he dug up her grave and built a cage with her bones. Excitable
Who would
boy,
write that?
They all said.
Well, he's just and this was supposed to be his big, like, commercial breakthrough record because his first album had been critically acclaimed but hadn't really sold a lot. And they said, Warren, your second album, this is your chance to have the big mainstream crossover.
Do you got a single? Oh, do I? She said.
Yeah, so like he submitted this as a single, and the record company said, no, seriously, what's your single? His next submission for the single was a song called Rollin' the Headless Thompson Gunner.
I love that song.
Yeah, which is a great song, but nothing anybody's ever got, which is why the record company over his protest finally went with Goddamn Werewolves of London.
And Lawyers, Guns, and Money's on that album, too.
Lawyers, Guns,
it?
And Money, which
it
is a great song.
It is a brilliant album.
Yeah, it really is. It's from the Excitable Boy album, Warren Zevon. And he raped her and killed her, la 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 la, hey hey. It's like he does a little kick at the end of it. All right, we are going to get on out of here, and well done. I heartily endorse that for number one, by the way. I withdraw any observations or complaint out of it. That was really, because amazingly enough, I forgot the whole killing that happened after the raping.
Yeah, see?
You remember the killing, though, Dawn. Join us tomorrow, and our guests will include Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. Coming up next, in mere moments, AZ Episode 2, followed by Encores of Legion of News in this very fine radio program. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Dawn Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Hagler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. It is Tuesday, October 26th, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. AZ is next. Thank you for listening. Be safe. See you tomorrow. Bye now.